Greet each one in Jesus' name this morning. It's a blessing to be here this morning with you and worship together with you. Been blessed in the service also thus far. As I thought of a message this morning, I think I should sit down and let Brother Ernie preach the message he was going to preach because the Lord laid the same message on my heart. The message on the home. So I guess I'll go ahead and preach what the Lord gave me to preach. We think of the home this morning. God is intensely interested in our homes. Why is God intensely interested in our homes? Now, I don't bring this message this morning because I know you. I feel like this is a need in your congregation. But I bring this message because I am burdened for our homes. It has been said, as the home is, so will the nation be. And I believe we don't have to do much. We don't have to look around very far till we understand that. We see the deterioration of the homes in our nation. And we see what it's doing to our nation. Marriages are falling apart. Children are suffering because the homes are falling apart. And I believe our nation is falling apart because our homes are falling apart. I'd like to bring that a little closer home this morning. I think we could say, as our homes are, so will the church be. As your homes are this morning, so will your congregation be. It's God's plan for the home. God established the home. Way back there in the Garden of Eden, God told Adam and Eve as he placed them there in the garden, he said, "Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth," and so forth. God established the home for the earth to be replenished. It's his plan for the home to be a place where children are brought up, brought into this world and nourished and taught and prepared for life. But brothers and sisters, this morning, most important is that it is from our homes that souls are prepared and moving toward eternity. From our homes. And as we look around us and we see homes out in the world, and we know some of them in our communities, where the children are lacking that security of home life, that security of a home where they can be taught, be prepared for life, and most of all, prepared for eternity. Turn with me to Ephesians chapter 5. Verse 23, I want to talk a little bit this morning to you as fathers, husbands. Verse 23 here says, "For the husband is the head of the wife." What does that phrase mean to you and I? What does it mean to you and I, fathers, husbands, to be the head of the wife? I think too often, maybe I'm just revealed myself, but our mind goes back to verse 22, where it says, "Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord." Is that what your mind does? Is that what my mind does? Is I think of this phrase, for the husband is the head of the wife. Or the husband is the head of the home, we might say. I think God has something more important here for us than that. As fathers, as husbands. He wants us to understand the responsibility that He lays on us. Rather than thinking of the responsibility of our wives to submit to us, He wants us to think about that God has given me, you, the responsibility of being the head of the home. It's a sobering responsibility. It's a solemn charge that God has placed upon us. You know, as you established a home, as I established a home, as we got married, my wife and I, and you and your wife, God, it was more than just that God gave me a companion to live with. But God gave me a responsibility. Gave you as fathers and husbands a responsibility. Responsibility to lead that home that was established. Give direction to that home. And it's a responsibility that we can't evade as brethren, as fathers, as husbands. It's a responsibility we can't pass off to our wives. Brethren, if there's failure in our homes, we need to look at ourselves and not our wives. We could turn to 1 Samuel chapter 3. We're not going to take time to do that this morning. We have there the account of Eli. We know that account of God as He placed judgment on Eli for the way he led out in his home. The way, the responsibility that God placed on him. The accountability that God held him for as he filled his place as a father in that home in relation to his sons, his children. And we compare that with Genesis chapter 18, where God is talking about Abraham, where he says, "For I know him that he will command his children and his household after him." God had confidence in Abraham. And we see two different homes as we think of Eli and the way he filled his place in the home and compared to Abraham. We may look a little bit later at Abraham. But God made it clear. Made Abraham's responsibility clear. He makes it clear to us. It says that for he will command his children and his household after him. That's Abraham. That was Abraham's responsibility. That's my responsibility. It's your responsibility as fathers, as brethren. A quote that I copied down in my studies. "Fathering is a soul-searching and at times soul-wrenching because it exposes a father's deficiency as few other duties can. The only answer is to humbly beseech God to work in us and in our children to the saving of our souls and theirs. Certainly God must be praised for any success in this great work of fathering." Brethren, it's not something that we can do on our own. Aren't we thankful this morning that we have God on our side? I want to say this morning, before we go any further, that I stand before you as a father, as a husband with many weaknesses and failures. I've been challenged in this message as I prepared. Fathers, God has laid on us a sobering responsibility. But as we think of the home, we think of the home as made up of also mothers. I'm not talking, when I talk about fathers leading out in the home, I'm not talking about a domineering figurehead here. One that does what he wants to do regardless of how his wife or children feel. Sometimes we may see that. But I'm talking this morning about a leading out and making sure that the right thing is happening in our homes. That's our responsibility. Leading out and teaching and training our children. I think sometimes we as fathers, we can become so wrapped up in our responsibility of being the breadwinner, and that is our responsibility. We need to do that. But we become so occupied and so wrapped up in that we leave our wives with the responsibility of the children too much. We do need to provide. We do need to meet the financial obligations. And that becomes a challenge, I know, as fathers at times, to balance that. To balance the thing of being a father and providing an income. It becomes a challenge. But I'd just like to encourage us this morning, fathers, as we think of that. We have a responsibility when we leave when our children leave our home, or when we leave this world. We have a responsibility to leave our children with an inheritance that is much greater and more important than a large monetary inheritance. We have a responsibility to leave our children with an inheritance that is much greater than a large monetary inheritance. Mothers, you too have a sobering responsibility in the home. I don't want to leave the impression that your responsibility is only to clean and wash and cook and change the baby's diapers. Well, that is your responsibility, and you need to do those things. But you have a greater responsibility than that. It has been said that the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. Or we might say a mother that faithfully fills her place in the home has a great impact on first the home, but also the church and the world. You have a solemn responsibility, a sober responsibility. A mother's faithful influence is not quickly forgotten by our children as they go out from our homes. Our children may forget many things about their growing up years, but a mother's faithful influence will go with them as they go throughout life. Fathers and mothers, being parents is a great responsibility that takes working together. It takes working together and pooling together. Oh, the sad situation when father and mother work against each other. We may not always think alike on every situation that comes up. We may not always agree totally on how things should be handled. But I believe, fathers and mothers, this morning our children should see us able to work through those differences, that different thinking. You know, we come from different backgrounds and we have different ideas, we have different ways of thinking at times. But our children need to see us working together, not against each other. There's times when we need to discuss behind the scenes and come to an agreement, come to an understanding. Husbands and fathers, we do well to listen to what our wives have to tell us. They have much good advice for us many times, if we're willing to listen. But I would like to say this morning, sad the home where father and mother are not united. Sad the home. The damage and confusion that our children live with, that it produces in the lives of our children when we can't work together. I trust this morning that that's not the case with anyone here. But I would like to say this morning, if it is, find help for the sake of your children, for your own sake. Find help if you as husband and wife are not able to pull together and work together. Fathers and mothers, we stand before our children daily as an influence and an example. We've all heard the saying, what we do speaks louder than what we say. And I believe that's so true. Our children see that. What am I teaching by my example as a parent? We teach where our priorities are by our example. We teach obedience by our example. We teach respect for others and respect for authority by our example. We teach honesty by our example. We teach love. We teach cheerfulness. We teach thankfulness. We teach mercy. We teach patience. We teach how to use our money. We teach what words and language are acceptable. And the list goes on. All these things we teach by our example as fathers and mothers. And our children learn these things as they see us relate to life. They learn so much from us. Some of the things we see in our children as they grow up. We realize as parents, they've learned from us. It's a sobering thought. We want them to learn from us. We do. We want them to learn what they need to learn for life. If you're like me this morning, you're asking, how can we as imperfect parents fill our place in the lives of our children? As I said, I stand before you an imperfect father. As I said before, brothers and sisters, God has promised to help us in this great work. We're not in this great work alone. He desires us to lean on Him, seek His wisdom, follow the principles He has given us in His Word. One thought I came across in my studies was that God didn't call Abraham a perfect father. He talked about Abraham there in Genesis 18. But God expressed his approval of Abraham as a father. And we can read the life of Abraham. And we can see there inconsistencies possibly. We can see there are things where, as he related to Ishmael and Hagar, and maybe some other things, where he could have done different. But God said of Abraham, "For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he has spoken of him." Why did Abraham meet God's approval? Because he was a perfect father? Because he was a perfect parent? I believe God's approval was upon Abraham because God saw him as a father that desired to live a life that was pleasing to God. And God saw him as a father that took seriously the responsibility of teaching his children to do the same. We compared that a while ago to Eli, and we see the opposite in Eli. Abraham knew. Abraham had a vision. He had a desire to live a life that was pleasing to God. And brothers and sisters, our children see that in us. They see what our desire is. They see how fervent we are in our relationship with God. They see how important it is to us. How important our relationship with God is. And believe it or not, they can also understand and see how serious we take the responsibility of teaching them. How important they are to us in the home. They see that. And it will have an impact. It will have an effect on where they come out. May God help us as we endeavor to do our part as fathers and mothers in the home. May we have the testimony that God had of Abraham, that he will command his children after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord. Isn't that our desire as parents? That we would see our children keep the way of the Lord. We think of teaching, training our children. We want to look a little more at that thought. I believe this morning, as I thought of this thought of training our children, I believe there's four basic principles that are essential for us to teach our children. We want to look at them a little bit this morning. First one I have is respect. I appreciated our brother's thoughts this morning. It's a very important aspect of child training. Very important thing for our children to learn. It's very important thing for us as parents to leave an example to our children. Our children are born with a me first mentality. You know how it is. That little baby, when he's born into our homes, he cries for attention. We give it the attention it needs. When he or she is hungry, we feed them. When they're sleepy, we take time to put them to sleep. This is all right. It's all important. It's all part of caring for our children, that little baby. And we say sometimes that that little baby pretty much rules the roost. We use that term. But as we think of that, there comes a time in that little child's life, that little baby's life, where they need to learn something else. Proverbs 29:15 says, "The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame." There comes a time in that little child, that little baby's life, that it needs to learn that life doesn't always center around them. It's important that they learn at a very young age that they are not in control of their own life. We might ask the question, how young? I believe this morning that when our little baby is old enough to show their displeasure, mothers, fathers, and that little baby shows its displeasure by making it themselves stiff in our arms, they're old enough for us to gently curb that expression by resisting that. Yes, we need to make sure their needs are met. They can't talk. They can't really tell us how they feel except by crying. Except by giving expression to that. But I think that we need to put forth effort as parents to learn when that little baby is resisting, is simply expressing a dissatisfaction that they want something that is they're just simply displeased about something. As we start young, to gently curb that expression, it makes it easier as they grow older. As we endeavor to help them to understand, as those expressions become more and more obvious, and we continue to curb those expressions, we're doing them a favor. And we'll look a little bit more. We're going to look a little bit more at discipline. But the concept, what we're looking at here is the concept of our children learning of the concept of surrendering their will to the will of another. And we might say the authority of another. And it's a very important concept for them to learn. We teach them respect, as our brother talked about this morning. We teach them respect as we teach them that concept. The concept that their will is subject to the will of another, or the authority of another. We teach them respect by the respect we require of them. We teach them to respect others by requiring them to respect the rights of others. You get the thought. That's the way they learn it. They won't learn it on their own. It's something we have to teach them as parents. We need to teach them to respect the rights of others. Just because someone else has something doesn't mean they can have it. Sharing is teaching respect. We teach respect for the privacy of others. And as we said, respect for authority is very important. Respect for authority is very important. It's very important. Brothers and sisters, we do our children a disfavor if they never learn that. The little child that says no to his parent needs taught that talking back is unacceptable. Older children that talk back and argue with their parents to try to get what they want need help to understand the concept of submission. The concept of submitting my will to the authority of another is so important. First of all, submitting my will to God, and then submitting to the other authority God has placed in my life. It's so important that we get that across to our children. Because it's a disfavor to them. And why is it a disfavor to them? Because it affects their whole life. First of all, it affects their thought pattern toward God and their relationship to God. And the thought of submitting to God's will for their life. And part of God's will for their life is submitting to authority that God has placed in their life. Point number two, obedience. It's the second basic principle of child training. I think this morning obedience and respect go hand in hand. Ephesians 6, this verse our brother read, says, "Children, obey your parents." He goes on, honor thy father and mother, that it may be well with thee. We teach our children respect for authority so they learn to obey. We teach them, on the other hand, we teach them to obey so they learn to respect and honor authority. A child that is not taught to obey authority will hardly respect authority. And this morning, brothers and sisters, fathers and mothers, that starts in the home with us as parents. That starts with teaching them to obey us as parents. It's very important that they learn to obey their father and mother. And as they learn that, then it moves on to the other authority in their life. The level of obedience our children will learn will be determined many times by the level of obedience we require as parents. If we require almost obedience, they will learn to almost obey. And that's a challenge. That's a challenge as parents to be consistent in that way. It's like I heard a little 3-year-old one time say, "I only did it one more time. I only did it one more time." How many one more times do we allow as parents? One grandfather said children need to learn the meaning of 4 basic words. They obey these words, they will obey all others. And those 4 words are no, stop, go, and come. Think about that. We teach our children, if they obey those 4 words, and there's a lot of practical outworking of those 4 words. If we teach them that, the obedience to those 4 concepts, we have taught them a lot about obedience. They're simple commands that our children can understand. So I think of teaching our children obedience, I believe there are 2 basic steps to teaching obedience. The first one is making sure our child understands what he is supposed to do, what we're asking him to do. Make sure he understands that. And secondly, is dealing with disobedience. Unwilling sulky obedience is not obedience. Point number three. Third principle is honesty. Honesty is a foundation stone to right living. Honesty is a foundation stone to right living. Proverbs 12:22 says, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but they that deal truly are his delight. Parents, do we love our children? Teach them honesty. A child that is left to learn to lie and be dishonest is a child that's hard to live with and relate to. And I don't think, if you're here this morning as parents, you know how children can have that tendency. We all have that tendency to want to should we just say it plainly? Lie out of our problems. Lie out of trouble. A person that grows up learning to lie to get what they want or to try to get out of trouble becomes what that verse quoted says. They become an abomination. They become a person that is hard to live with. Our children should understand that lying is a serious offense. And they need to learn that while they're still young. It becomes a challenge sometimes, parents, to discern when a child is lying. It takes effort. Some children can lie pretty freely if they're left to learn to lie. You've seen that happen. Some children we've related to. And they can learn to lie without hardly showing any sign of guilt. But I believe we need to put forth the effort that it takes as parents to discern whether our child is telling the truth or not. It's an important concept that they need to learn. Parents, this morning, if we ignore lying in our child, he will likely do it again and again. It will become a way of life to him. The fourth principle that I believe is important that we teach our children is an awareness of God and a desire to please him. And maybe this one should have been first. But I believe this is an important principle that we do well in our child training as we endeavor to teach our children. We teach them awareness of God, and we teach them the importance of the importance of pleasing him. We develop their conscience when we do that. This is something we can teach by example as parents. We teach by the things we say and the example we leave. And I believe it can start real young with our children. We teach them the awareness of God when we simply ask that little child on our lap, who made you? God did. Who made the puppy? God did. Who made the grass? God did. We teach them awareness of God by drawing attention, taking time to draw attention to a beautiful sunset that God made. We teach them awareness of God when we talk about God's care for us. We teach them awareness of God when we draw attention to God's working and leading in our lives by the circumstances in life. Do our children see us doing that? Or do they simply get from us that, well, that just happened. It's the way life is. Or do we tell, or do we draw attention that this was God's plan? This was God's will. God brought this about. It can be hard sometimes when we struggle with it ourselves. The verse, "Thou God seest me," is a good verse to quote to our children. We help them to understand that, you know, we teach them that God is there all the time. God sees everything. He knows everything. There is nothing they can do. Even though they can hide it from us as parents, they'll never hide it from God. We teach our children how important it is to us to please God, and we leave them an example by where we draw lines in relation to our spiritual life. As they see us being willing to do that, it shows them how important it is to us to please God. How much like the world are we? We teach them important the awareness of God, and we teach them about God by how important it is to us to be at church and be there on time. What about the time and money that we spend for the Lord's work? They see us living for self and spending money on things, or do they see us having time for the Lord's work? These are all things that we teach them that helps them to understand, how to develop an awareness of God and a desire to please Him in life. Be many other things we could look at. We want to look a little bit now at the thought of discipline or punishment. This morning it would be nice to think that if we are effective in our teaching, and if we live a good example before our children, they will learn what they need for life. It would be nice if that would be the way it is. And we need to teach. Discipline without teaching is ineffective. But I think we could say teaching without discipline is also ineffective in the lives of our children. Self-expression and trying to reason with our children to get them to do what we tell them to do is not a biblical concept of how to train our children. We see that in the world around us. The thought of self-expression, the thought of needing to reason with our children to get them to do what we want to do. Yes, as we said before, we do teach them, and we do endeavor to help them to understand. And as we do that, it doesn't take as much discipline. Turn with me back to Proverbs. We're just going to read a few verses here, familiar verses in relation to this thought of discipline. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 13. In the lips of him that hath understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him that is void of understanding. Verse 24, the fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous. I'm sorry, chapter 13, verse 24. He that spareth his rod hateth his son, but he that loveth him chasteneth him betimes. Chapter 19. Verse 18. Chasten thy son while there is hope. Let not thy soul spare for his crying. Chapter 22. Verse 15. Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. 23, 13, and 14. Withhold not correction from the child, for if thou beatest him with the rod, he shall not die. Thou shalt beat him with the rod, and shall deliver his soul from hell. 26, verse 3. A whip for the horse, a bridle for the ass, and a rod for the fool's back. 29, verse 15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. What are we talking about when we talk about this thought of beating him with the rod? I don't think these verses this morning are bringing out. In fact, I know they're not. They're not talking about abusing and beating our children. As we look at the meaning of these words, this thought of beat, in the Hebrew is more the thought of to strike. And the rod in the Hebrew means a stick used for punishment or a walking stick. In other words, the thought that these verses are endeavoring to bring out is that we use a stick or a paddle, we call it, whatever we use, to inflict or associate pain in the minds of our children with wrongdoing. That's the goal. The goal of associating pain with wrongdoing. And by doing that, we're developing in their minds the concept of cause and effect. Or we might say, sowing and reaping, that the Bible talks about. It teaches the concept that wrongdoing brings punishment and sadness, and doing right things brings rest and happiness. That's the goal. That's why we discipline our children. And the goal is to help them to learn to make choices that are right and bring rest and happiness. That's the goal. The goal in discipline is not to vent our feelings as parents. And I want to say this morning, we do well as parents to not wait until we get to the place where we feel like we need to vent our feelings. We discipline that child before we get to that place. But if we don't discipline the child will eventually make us feel that way. Yes, we do need to control our feelings as parents, especially as fathers. The other purpose of discipline is to bring our child's will into subjection. We talked about that a while ago. It also is, as we associate that pain with wrongdoing, it teaches them to bring their will into subjection. It brings them into subjection to authority. And I'd like to say this morning that true loving, effective discipline is more than just smacking a child, letting him or her go and nurse their own feelings of how they feel about that punishment. Our discipline will be effective when we take time to determine the surrender of their wills and show our love for them. The child won't learn that as we discipline them and leave them in a room by themselves until they're over the discipline. Sometimes we need to put forth more effort to accomplish that surrender. It takes time. If fathers and mothers more time than sometimes we think we have. And it's not a pleasant thing. The battle of helping our children to learn to surrender their wills is not a pleasant thing. It takes hard work. It takes time. But the verse we read there in Proverbs 13:24, it says, "He that spareth the rod hateth his son. But he that loveth him, be chasteneth him betimes." 1 Timothy 3:4, "A good father is one that ruleth well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity." He's talking there about the ordained, but I believe that applies to each one of us as parents. We think of our children. I want to think a little bit yet. The importance of, as parents, of our relationship with the church. As we think of our homes. As we think of helping our children. As we think of preparing our children for eternity. As they go forth from our homes. Preparing them for life. Maybe we should ask ourselves this morning, how is my relationship to the church as fathers and mothers? How much value do I place on the church in my home? How much do I feel in need of the church? These are questions we need to ask ourselves as parents. Do I appreciate the help and direction of the church? How do my children hear me talk about the brethren and sisters in the church? Or the church in general, or the ministry? We do well to seriously consider those questions as parents. God designed the church for our good. And for the good of our homes. He designed it that way. He designed the church to be a place where we can receive encouragement and help to be faithful. A place where our children and grandchildren can receive help and encouragement to be faithful. That's God's design as he designed the church. And he made the church up of home, made us place the homes in the church. He gave us the church. Fathers and mothers, God gave us the church to help us. Do we feel a need of the help of the church? It's God's desire that we work together as a church for the good of our children, for the good of our home. When we as parents destroy or diminish our children's confidence in the church by the things we do and say, we take away that foundation and stronghold for them. God has given that as the church is a foundation, it's a stronghold for our children and our grandchildren. It's something that God has given them for their good. We take that away when we destroy their confidence in the church. May God help us and give us what we need. Help us to see the need of the church. In closing, I'd simply like to quote the verse in Galatians 6, verse 9. It says, "Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not." That's God's promise to you and I this morning as parents, fathers and mothers. Parenting takes a lot of work, a lot of hard work, a lot of responsibility. But if we press on and if we fill the place that God has called us to as parents, we will reap if we faint not. Our children will benefit. They will go forth from our homes better fitted to fill the place that God has called for them. Yes, we can't make the decisions for our children as they leave, as they grow up. They have to choose on their own to have a relationship with God and serve Him. But the concepts and the principles and the example we leave them will never leave them as they go forth from our homes. So let us, as we endeavor to fill that place, let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Let's kneel for prayer.